Just before we start, actually, okay. You know the way we normally open this thing? This is special. This is for people who listen to the podcast, because they actually get some stuff that the people who don't listen to the podcast...
Oh, so is this like the opening?
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is, okay.
So what we're going to do in a moment is we're going to try a Google Hangout on air. I'm going to press the start broadcast button, and this will get captured on YouTube. But the people who listen to this now, right now, this very moment, will hear this, but the people who are watching it...
So basically, this is all setting up for a Google Hangout that we've not done for a vodcast,
So here we go.
Right.
And we'll do the It's Friday thing in a moment. Do 3, 2, 1. Okay, so...
Won't this have a date on it? It's a date stamp somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And it's Friday. We'll have to say, okay, we're about to go live. And 3, 2, 1.
It's Friday!
Yes. This is the Teach Computing podcast, which we record... Friday.
It's a vodcast as well.
Well, yeah. So today we've decided to go live for all you viewers at home.
And I won't do that.
No? Okay. No. I won't do that again. No. But we are live now. So my name is Alan O'Donoghue. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at TechnoTeacher, T-E-K-N-O Teacher.
I'm at Vicky Vale, V-I-K-K-I-V-I-L-L-E.
And we don't really think that we're experts in teaching computing, but we're trying to be.
I'm trying very hard this week to be an expert.
Okay.
Been trying.
Very trying.
And last week as well. Go on.
So we record this podcast each week and we talk about things that we've been doing in our classroom. And more and more things are happening outside of our classroom as well.
Yeah.
So we have a little program here which you can have a sneak preview of. These are the kind of things we're going to be talking about. Ah, the people who listen to this podcast won't have seen that.
No, they won't see that.
So, for the listeners at home, we're going to talk about...
Hour of Code.
Raspberry Pis in the classroom.
App Inventor in class.
Training opportunities.
And Extended Learning Day.
And probably people are thinking, what is
Extended Learning Day? A whole day of computing, basically, for our Year 7 students on Monday.
Now, when we tell you about some of the things that we're doing, we hope that you kind of think, that's an interesting idea. I'm not sure if I would do that, but at least it gets you to think about it and then maybe send us some messages or tweets and things that says, oh, actually, I'm doing something like that or whatever.
Mm.
So, Vicky.
Yes.
You've been great. You've helped our department all get ready for the Hour of Code.
It was actually Mark Greenwood, who first sent me the email, the link to the Hour of Code. And I registered the whole school for it a number of weeks ago. And then it started on Monday the 9th, and it's been all week by csedweek.org online. And there was loads and loads of tutorials from Google Blockly, Microsoft Touch Develop, MIT App Inventor, Scratch, Tinker,
Khan Academy, Code Academy.
Carno, Lightbot got involved. There was an app for that. There was Hopscotch. There was all sorts of things.
Now, the way I think about Hour of Code is we started about 4 or 5 years ago in the UK reviewing what we were doing in terms of teaching computing. I think the US... it's a bigger thing and it's harder for them to keep up and catch up with where we are. So I think that it feels to me like they've come later into this game. But, they've put millions and millions and they've got code.
The first state in America made computing a compulsory part of their national standards just last week.
Ah. Mm-hmm. You don't know which state?
I think it was Chicago.
Ah, okay.
I'm not certain about that, but I'm fairly sure it was Chicago. But they were the first state now that have actually made it a compulsory part of their curriculum.
And what's one of the things I think is great about it, because it's the size that it is, the states, they've been able to invest a lot more into this, and they've got so many partners on board, so Microsoft, Google, all of these.
Well, I think we were actually really lucky, because if you remember back at the Computing at School conference, I asked the question of the guy from Google as to why Google was so interested in the UK curriculum rather than concentrating on the US.
Oh.
And their reason was that the US was so fragmented with their curriculum, because it was all independent states.
That's right.
That it was harder to have an impact, so they thought they'd start with the UK first. So we've been lucky in that regard that we've had all this pressure from these massive organisations before, and then the US have just followed suit.
So I following your example, I tried it out with a few of my classes today, and we went on, we watched the video together. There's like a short 2-minute clip, and then we tried that. There's like an exercise using Google Blockly with the Angry Birds.
Yeah, Angry Birds in, and it's got 20 levels,
that's
and they get a certificate at the end. But then about every 3 levels, there's a video, isn't there, explaining the next steps. And there's tutorials in there, but amongst the other tutorials as well, there's videos from Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, and lots of different things. It's absolutely fantastic.
What I really hope is, I mean, the week is due to finish on the 15th of December, which is Sunday, I think. I really hope that all those materials don't disappear straight
There's
away.
There's been a campaign on Twitter asking for the tutorials to stay already. So we'll wait and see what they come up
because
with.
Because there is just too many things on there to do in a week.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never used Microsoft Touch Develop before. I think I started, I used it Monday, I think. Monday or Tuesday, I started with the Touch Develop. I actually started with my computing class, and then they moved on to Google Blockly and App Inventor. And the Touch Develop one is really fantastic.
One of the things I particularly liked about it as well, because a lot of these activities, Khan Academy, Code Academy, in the past I thought, well, it seems like you have to do a lot to get into it. But I think all these organisations have deliberately thought, how are we going to put something together here that people can just get in and get on with it? And it's just been a hit. I mean, as that class, you were in my classroom just then when I had that year nine class. And they can be quite a giddy, excited class. And you heard they were just
concentrating.
There was a lovely moment as well this morning. My GCSE year 11 class, or mixed ability, and there was a boy in that class who, I got stuck on level 18. He said, "How come you're stuck, sir?" And this boy came over and he showed me how to do it. I was like, wow, that's really good. And he kind of went away with a bit of a bounce in his walk.
Well, my GCSE computing class, I did the Google Blockly Angry Bird one. Mm-hmm. And they finished that quite quickly, to be honest, the year 10 class. And then I moved them on to Google Blockly and the maze task, which is very similar, but it's harder. And there's 10 levels in that. And I said the highest ability, there is this amazing coder, got stuck on level 10. And a guy, a young lad behind him, he says, miss, look at this. And he hadn't yet pressed play, but he knew he'd solved it. He says, I've done it. I said, how do you know it's going to work? And he explained it all to me. And then this super coder behind him turned around and his jaw at the floor. And it worked. And he was this grin spread across this child's face. I've done it before you. And it was just this instant gratification. It was
because
fantastic.
This particular boy you're talking about, the first one, people just kind of think, oh,
he can
do everything. That's one of the things I've noticed since I've been teaching computing in class is I'm constantly surprised by children who maybe in the past have been classed as underachievers.
Yeah.
And they just suddenly come like, oh, no, you just need to change the algorithm in this way so it's a repeat. I think, where's that come from? And you can tell they kind of go, well,
I had two other children as well from my year nine class come and see me at the end of lunchtime as well. And they were telling me that they carried on at home.
Wow.
And Joe as well, because he actually told me about the Angry Bird Google Blockly one. Another person in our department. And he's had loads of kids coming to him and saying, I carried on at home and how much they've enjoyed it. It's been fantastic. What a brilliant idea.
Should we move on to talking about Raspberry Pis in the classroom?
Yeah.
So yesterday I was doing another one of these, how do you teach computer science with the Raspberry Pi? So that was in Salford and we had 32 teachers. It was fantastic. There were so many on there. We did things like we started off, just get everything out of the box and plug it in and what do you need? Because I think once I did a Raspberry Pi training course and everything was all set up when people came in and they were kind of, well, how is it different from what we normally do? So this time, because we're plugging everything in, they got to see all that. But one question that comes up quite a lot, and it happened yesterday, is people saying, so how do you actually use them in the classroom? And, you know, another thing that I'm really grateful for you, you're saying, come on, we need to make sure now we've got a permanent setup where we can use these.
Yeah, well, Ben Smith has set it up at his school, AKS, at Manchester Budo, and he's got it set up permanently so the kids can bring in their own Raspberry Pis, so he's got the wires and everything.
So they're actually bringing in the whole computer,
not the SD card. No, they can bring in their own Pis and connect them up if they want to, so everything's there.
Would he need to have a few spares in the classroom as well?
Yeah, he has. He's got his own set, but they can bring in their own from home as well.
What's the need for bringing in their own Raspberry Pi?
Because they want to, because it's theirs and they can. Because it's a pocket-sized computer.
Right. And I suppose,
so why not?
Like when one of the things I like when I go to events and I see like a Carrie Ann Philbin and she takes out her little Pi bow.
Yeah.
She's got this beautiful little Girl Geek Diaries Raspberry Pi case. And when you go, people have got their own little cases. So I suppose that's one nice thing.
Personalised, yeah. But why not? Because they're not connected to the network. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason, there's no security issue with them as to not to allow children to bring their own in. Unless, of course, they've got inappropriate content on, in which that's just a behaviour issue anyway.
So one of the things that we're working at together at the moment is how do we actually physically make sure our classroom is prepared for this? Because the tough thing to balance is making everything accessible so that you can get in, use the GPIO pins, but at the same time, you've got these kind of security implications.
It's protecting your own equipment, isn't it? One thing we will have to do, and as lovely as it may be and as tidy as it may look, the classroom is cable ties. Unfortunately, the cable ties are no longer appropriate. And certain classrooms like this one, they've been designed to protect the equipment and to stop the children messing with the hardware, when now what we're saying is, we want you to mess with the hardware. So I mean, it's a technician's nightmare, really.
This classroom, if I just move this around for a minute, you can see we are actually in a classroom. Yeah. So this, and it does look quite tidy, this classroom. But
it's a beautiful classroom, but it's not built for
meddling with wires and stuff.
For tinkering.
Now, one of the things as well, science. I suppose, because the keyboards and mice in here are USB, I mean, they're fairly strong in terms of connections, whereas the older PS2 type connections, little pins that would bend from time to time, that's something we're working on at the moment.
I already started cutting some of the cable ties last week.
Oh, cable ties. I thought you'd say the table.
No, the cable ties. I went round with a pair of scissors and started that the other day, but that we just need to carry on.
And a colleague of ours has suggested that we still got, when we put all these flat screens in here, we kept all the old CRT screens.
No, I don't think he was on about the CRTs, was he?
Oh.
I think he was saying that there was smaller flat screens elsewhere. Oh, I didn't think he meant the CRTs.
Okay, for outside the podcast and later on.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. So you're going to be teaching a lesson on Monday.
I'm going to try on Monday. Yeah. We've got Monday, we said.
With the Raspberry Pis.
But we've also got Tuesday, haven't we? Because you have your Year 11s on Tuesday as well.
Correct,
We could actually get it set up on Monday and then do it on Tuesday, because I could do App Inventor on Monday.
My classic. Although I love teaching the GCSE computing, in Year 11, they're just spending so much time doing controlled assessments.
Yeah.
And I really, because I've been doing a lot more training at the moment, so I feel like my teaching time is limited. And when I've got them, it's right, okay, get on with your assignments.
They need something that makes them, re-enthuses them, don't they?
Yeah.
That's what they need and motivates them. I think a couple of lessons next week, App Inventor and Raspberry Pi, I think that will inspire them again.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. So you have App Inventor.
App Inventor.
That was look on our program.
On our program of things to discuss. Yes, finally got it working today in school. They've updated it. It's App Inventor 2. It's in beta at the moment, but it's available for use. And it involves downloading some setup files. Whereas before it used a Java file, you had to download a Java executable. You don't know. There's an AI starter that needs to be installed. Which
right, this all sounds very, very complicated and technical. Is there a document online somewhere?
Yeah, appinventor.mit.edu, and it's all there under Get Started, all the guidance
and if
documentation.
If somebody was watching this or listening to this afterwards, they could say, at Vickyville, V-I-K-K, where is that? And you might... I'll reply
to that on Twitter and point you in the right direction. But it was really, under the Arrow Code, there was some just really simple basic tutorials, really quick to create apps that I wanted to do last week, but unfortunately the setup files, it was a little bit complicated opening the ports today because it needs a port opening for it to communicate.
And this is because we're using it on a network. At home, you wouldn't have the same issue.
That wouldn't happen, no. But with it being on a network... With everything being in the cloud, where you're creating the apps technically on a website, they're in the cloud, it then needs to communicate to the emulator. So what App Inventor does, it opens up on your screen what looks like the screen of a mobile phone, so you can actually immediately see the apps that they're creating. It's this instant gratification, isn't it, that the kids want all the time. So we had a few problems with that, but today, finally got it working, so next week... We're also introducing App Inventor. And this is all going towards our new scheme of work that will also be implemented
by September 2014.
For the new curriculum, whereas with Year 9, we will be doing a long project on App Inventor at the end of the summer.
Brilliant.
There you go.
We were going to talk about training opportunities as well. So I'm doing a lot of training at the moment, but I'm just loving it so much. It's just so nice to go into places and people saying, oh, wow, so glad, you know, all these ideas you're giving us.
I like meeting people, networking opportunities. The travel's not so good.
Yes, because you had a rough run where you had to go to Birmingham on one day and then London on the other, and it was foot and train and that
well,
kind of
stuff. It was trains, planes, well, except the planes. You've done the trains, planes and automobiles, haven't you? I haven't.
I'm a bit of a tart. I don't mind the travel quite so much. In fact, I'm booked to go down to Barnstaple in February. I'm doing 2 days down there, the 5th of February and the 6th of February. I'm away on my wife's birthday, which she might not be too pleased about.
Does she not know? Have you just told her on a podcast?
No, I did actually ask her permission, first of all. I've learned now. So the reason I'm going down to Devon is it's part of... Did you see this thing I was talking about? You can get CPD for free from
your
school?
Yeah.
So... the demand for that was just like, whew, lots of people saying, what, you're really going to come into our school for free? So I explained how it works. So we allocated a few spaces for that to run. And yes, so some schools are going to receive their CPD for free. The way it works is a school agrees to host the training in their school.
And then they sell seats.
Well, we're doing all of that. So I've got these events listed now in Eventbrite. Mm. And we're hoping that they'll... promote it so that people will sign up to come to their the training event at their school. But the host school gets to decide what the training event is all about, and then we promote it and market it. So we're agreeing to do four to begin with, and I mean, it looks like it's been really popular. If that carries on, I think I can... I've kind of had to get school to go along with me on this because I've said, look, come on, I think this will work. I think it'll work.
I think it's a really good model. Yeah. I think it really makes sense because it distributes the cost of the CPD, doesn't it, to around a network of schools or a group of schools rather than it being a central place.
And it also means that we're not just tied to London, Birmingham, Manchester. I'm going down to Barnstaple. And not just Barnstaple, I'm doing one in Darwin Vale, which is not too far.
No, it's not far.
And the kind of courses that we're offering, I mean, you're offering some of the... Say, just tell me about when you were showing me one before that you'd written.
Teach Computing for Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2. I'm just introducing the computing curriculum that I'm going over what the requirements are, the changes, and deciphering all the language. I mean, NACE have recently published a document to guide primary schools.
It's a really good document.
Yeah, it is good. But actually going through that and actually covering ways of how to deliver it, what they'll already be doing, and just adapting their existing practice as well to cover the new curriculum from 2014, with some practical activities thrown in as well, covering some programming in Scratch, and Phil Bagg's fantastic jam sandwich robot. We'll give that a go.
I've used that so many times.
It's so easy and it's just so much fun.
The more messy you do the better.
Yeah, the more engaging it is, and for the teachers involved as well.
And you did. We showed that, or we talked about that the meeting we had at St Ignatius, because you've been doing these network meetings for primary schools as well
for a while.
And you've got
another one in January.
That's right.
The end of January.
So. That's one of the courses, Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2.
Yeah, another one, Kodu. Kodu
that's
for Key
right.
Stage 3.
That's
Kodu
on the 17th of January.
Yeah, there's another one. That's Kodu. Coding with Kodu for Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2. We've already had one of those, which was really good. Got really fantastic feedback. And I also do those for Key Stage 3 as well. Now Kodu's been updated. It's got more features in than it's had
before. You were telling
me
there's more logical decision-making.
Yeah, there's more decision-making available. And it's also made multi-platform games much easier to create. So it's now on 1.4.6, the update, but actually now when you get into it, it's far more complicated. It can be really, really complicated, the games. Obviously, it's event-driven, so it's doing constant loops, if you think of it, really, but you're also doing constant selection if statements, your decision-making. But you can actually now use multiple variables as well and label the variables, which you could do before.
Yeah, that's
wasn't
quite
as
a move.
Clear on how to do it.
I remember when I first looked at it, I thought it seemed quite limited.
Yeah, no, you can. Yeah, and you can actually, when, say, a certain variable equals, then do something.
Yeah.
So you can.
Comparisons.
Yeah, you can do that.
So the other courses that we're writing some more, and we've got some more published. We're going to be doing some more Raspberry Pi days. So it's like, what is the Raspberry Pi for beginners? And then like taking Raspberry Pi to the sky, all that kind of stuff.
That's
got a bit of a ring to it. Then we've got the Minecraft courses, which we'll be promoting soon as well, which is how to program within Minecraft. We did a bit of that yesterday in Salford, and there was teachers going, this is fantastic. My kids are spending hours at home on Minecraft.
Yeah.
So that's I think that's going to be quite a hit. And we've still got the staple diet of the courses, which is how do you introduce computing into your curriculum. We've got the Python beginners course, so people who've never done any text-based programming before. We're going to have a Python advanced course. And then we've got the GCSE computing courses. Mm-hmm. So we've got two. We've got one all about...
We need a Key Stage 3 computing course.
Yeah, we've kind of got it. I mean, the Python course and the computing into your curriculum. So we look at things like, we look at Scratch, some Python for Key Stage 3. And I also show a few of the other tools that I've been using, like Play My Code and Code Sculptor recently is one of the little ones I've adopted. So if you listen to this podcast and you're thinking, oh, we need to get some training for our school.
Can I just go back to something, actually, because I'm thinking...
For the podcast,
yeah, people are going to be listening to this thinking, hold on, you haven't talked about GCSE computing here at all. Well, you were saying about your controlled assessment that you thought they were going on too long.
Yes.
And I see my intention is, with my year 10s this time, is to divide up the controlled assessment.
Yes,
they do not need to do it in one 20-hour block, do they? So task, obviously, in the programming one, A453 on the OCR spec, there's three tasks within the controlled assessment.
Right.
My intention is to get task one boxed off out of the way before February half term.
I can see working. I'm doing the investigation assignment, which is A452.
That needs to be done all in
and
one go.
It doesn't have to be done all in one go, but I can't really see other ways around it because
the
they are all
computer,
linked.
Yeah, the little man computer all linked. Well, they are all linked together.
And it's worth pointing out as well, you don't have to do the little man computer.
No.
I'm just a glutton for punishment.
See, I like the App Inventor one.
Well, I am warming to the idea of the App Inventor one, but we've had so... I mean, today, you've spent all day trying to get App Inventor, working with the technician to get it on.
That's,
and
again, because it's a network, so that's much easier than the earlier versions to get it working. It's much easier, and it's testing out with a full class of students.
Last year, when I tried getting... I just kept banging my head against a wall. It still marks. Look, you can still see the...
But I think it's the engagement with the App Inventor one, and also to get the marks, it's... what they actually need to do.
I would say there's no right or wrong. It's about trying to get a balance. There is some really kind of deep, pure computing concepts that are in the Little Man Computer that are... I had a couple of ripples this week where people have gone like, oh, I get it now. You know?
I think that's the whole purpose of there being so many controlled assessments to choose from, isn't it? It's differentiation.
There's a Raspberry Pi one, and I kept thinking, I wonder... I'm almost contemplating now... running a couple of Saturday courses for the students to come in with a parent if they want to introduce the other investigation assignments, to introduce them, but then we'd have to find a way of making that work in class so I can supervise and make sure it's their own work. But I don't have so many ideas.
We could have, like we said, February half term days and get them in for a couple of days.
There's no reason why it would just be children from our school. We could open it to children from other schools as well if they wanted to come. All ideas. Extended learning day.
Yeah.
Now, so I don't know if people listen to this have something like an extended learning day in
their
school.
Well, we had at Ashton, we had STEM days where the whole school were involved, or we had a year 10 STEM day where the whole of, say, year 10 were off timetable to take part in STEM activities.
So the way it works in our school is we have four of these days in a year where the whole normal timetable is suspended for that one day. And on that one day... Year 8 went up, they had a Faith and Justice Day.
Yeah.
Some year 10s...
Year 9 was the Lionheart Challenge.
Year 10 was
the Lionheart Challenge,
and some went off on a trip to the Close Show.
Yes.
And then, they're all doing different specialisms on that day. And I've planned a lot of these kind of Hacks of Future ones in the past. And you planned this one.
Well, I did, but I didn't do a great deal in the end. I coordinated it, but I actually roped in my... fantastic colleagues at Edge Hill University, and we got all of the majority of the computing PGC students, the trainees, who are fantastic, a really fantastic bunch. If anybody's got any vacancies coming up next September, go to Edge Hill, because there are so many fantastic trainees there. Other, obviously, training centres are available, but they came in and they delivered five different workshops. Was the five or was the six, actually?
Six.
There was six
groups. O-U-R-L-A-D.
They did six different sessions, most of them using Python, which was year seven. I was a little bit,
Is it going to work?
Is that really? But the year seven groups were absolutely fantastic, but they moved around them through a carousel.
But to their full credit, the students had spent a lot of time thinking about how to make it accessible.
Yeah, and they did. They succeeded. There wasn't a session that I saw and that I've understood from the rest of the staff who were in assisting, supporting, where they just couldn't do it. And the students got so much out of
it. What I particularly like something about this model, which was so... I didn't see all the sessions.
No.
I think I saw three different ones. I spent a lot of time in the Raspberry Pi one. But as I went round, it seemed like in most rooms, there was three or four student teachers. Mm-hmm. And it looked like they'd co-designed the lessons. They'd worked on them together. And what was funny was, what was really good was as the day went on, you could see each time they iterated their lesson, they tweaked and changed things slightly to get a better response. And because each time a different class would come in and they were mixed ability, but they were all year sevens, it meant that they could almost try that thing out and improve it again with a new class. It wasn't like, a year 11 class and then year seven, So they all pretty much had the same experience. I just thought it was a really good model.
Well, between the three of them, they all got to deliver it at least once as well.
Yes.
So they all got to reflect and improve on their own practice and how they communicated with the students, I think. So it was really beneficial to them, but it was just really beneficial to us as well to actually see, because obviously our department got to move around and see these sessions. So Joe, I think he saw four different sessions in Python.
And there were some elements of it which you would expect. I mean, I've been teaching 20-something years. and there were some elements where I felt like I was driving behind a learner driver on my way into work. I was kind of like, why are you doing it that way? I want you to, no, do this, do that,
but
the
other. But you've got to sit back.
But for some of these are their earliest teaching experience, these students.
They've been in placement since, since September. This is their first... they're only teaching 10 hours a week, and a lot of that will have been team teaching prior to now.
I was really impressed with the quality of what they'd prepared, the resources, how it was delivered. It was a real eye-opener. It was really, really good.
And it was fantastic.
Enlightening as well to think that this is the next generation that are coming in to teach.
Because they're the people who are going to be teaching computing. They're actually the first round of PGCE computing.
And a
teachers.
Lot of them had software development, computing technology backgrounds, and they were just coming in going, well, yeah, this is what we're going to be doing. It was just... Full credit to you.
It was a really good day. But thank you to Dawn Hewitson, at Dawn Hewitson at Edgehill. She's absolutely fantastic, and all of the trainees. And I've promised them a drink on Wednesday when I get over to Edgehill to see them.
We had a session downstairs where we were using the Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
And even that, I mean, it was a room that wasn't a computer room. We just went
it
in.
Might
and
it might be soon.
Yeah, we'll see. Just a really, really good thing. I think if we were doing that again, what I might like to see is at the end of the day, the last hour, for one of the teachers to try and teach that same lesson. So it's almost like you watch the students in the morning four times teach the lesson.
So we're actually observing them and then getting our ideas and adjusting.
But not so much to say.
And then going, right, okay, this is how I do it.
Yes, that's exactly the words I wanted to use. Not... This is the way to do it.
No, this is how I do it.
I would do things slightly different.
Interpreting what I've seen you do today, this is how I do it.
And it would give the students the opportunity to go, yeah, I couldn't get that bit. But when the teacher did it, they did it.
I tell you what, as well, another thing that I said to the students at the end of the day, that we actually managed to identify a relatively small number, I suppose, but of gifted and talented students in year seven on the back of that day. Because we straight away, going around the different sessions, some had managed to complete all of the tasks that were for really extended them, magic eight ball task in one of them for a year seven set, and we had a student complete it. And that was and he actually found a problem in the code that the students had brought in with him. It didn't work. Well, it's not doing anything, Miss. Why is it not doing it? So we sat down and he solved it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
The other thing in terms of risk, I think there was high risks and low risks. Some of the high risks was we've never done something like this exactly before, and then the low risk was, well, these students may not see these children again, so they could try.
Yeah, it didn't necessarily matter.
Got 40 seconds left, and we're going to run out of time. So you've been listening to Vicky Dodd, Vicky Vale on Twitter, VickiVille,
and Techno Teacher. The ugly one.
Yeah, the one with very little hair. This podcast, we do this for fresh air, fun. We do it out of love for our fellow teachers.
Well, because we get asked to as well.
Yeah. If you liked the podcast, send us a tweet or an email. You can contact us lots of different ways. Thank you for listening. I've got 10 seconds or so. Oh, but we're not the only people doing stuff like this.
No, no.
The Computing at School community. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a member of Computing at School, shame on you. Bye.